Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's carnival time. So, this program has been recorded a day or two before you hear it. So, if anything really remarkable has happened in the intervening time that I'm not talking about today, it's not my obtuseness you should blame. It's my carnivalization. The new F-bomb. I believe on this program a couple of weeks ago, the subject first came up of a company called Ocwen Financial. More information is coming out about it, thanks to the Financial Times in this particular case. Ocwen Financial has gone into the business of mortgage servicing. Mortgage servicing is where after you've gotten a mortgage from a bank and you have to pay back the payments, hence the name. The bank has long since sold off the mortgage to be securitized. Do you remember that? Now, who collects the money that you pay in your monthly payments, or who forecloses on you if you don't? That task is the job of the mortgage servicer. Until recently, they were owned by the major banks, but when we learned some lessons after the 2008 financial thing, the banks found it was going to be less profitable to be mortgage servicers. So they sold the rights to service your mortgage to a new bunch of non-bank servicers who were not regulated. Presto changeo. Ocwen Financial, according to the Financial Times, the fourth largest U.S. mortgage servicer, has come under renewed fire. New York's chief financial regulator has warned that potential conflicts of interest could encourage the company to, quote, push homeowners unduly into foreclosure. In a letter to Ocwen, New York's Department of Financial Services highlighted the dual role of William Irby, the chairman of Ocwen, who is also the largest shareholder of four other affiliated entities. According to the New York Department of Financial Services, his interest in such businesses, quote, raises the possibility that management has the opportunity incentive to make decisions concerning Ocwen that are intended to benefit the share price of affiliated companies, resulting in harm to borrowers, mortgage investors, or even Ocwen shareholders as a result. Ocwen has snapped up billions of dollars worth of assets that give the company the right to collect payments on thousands of American home loans. One of its affiliated companies, Altisource, stands to profit by selling and renting homes that have been foreclosed on. Uh-oh. Servicing firms' practices have been under growing regulatory scrutiny. The New York Department of Financial Services halted indefinitely Ocwen's purchase of servicing rights from Wells Fargo earlier this year. And in December, Ocwen agreed to provide $2 billion in loan modifications to homeowners to settle with the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which said it found years of significant and systemic misconduct that occurred in every stage of the mortgage secure servicing process, including foreclosures. So why not let them get bigger and have the rights to service? You've been serviced. Ocwen's failure to affirmatively recognize the conflict of interest demonstrates the relationship between Ocwen and the affiliated companies warrants further examination, said the New York regulator. It said it cast serious doubts on Ocwen's public statement that it had a strictly arm's-length relationship with the affiliated companies. Since servicing mortgages has a finite lifespan, they either get paid off or foreclosed, Ocwen has been seeking new businesses to diversify its income, including higher quality prime mortgages. Just last week, it sold a new type of bond to help finance its growth. So you could lend money to them if you wanted to. Moody's, the rating service, warned this week Ocwen and other non-bank mortgage servicers could become the next generation of subprime lenders. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we learned that somebody made a little mistake when they called our species sapiens. Hello, welcome to the show.
I
echo, 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 Andy. Giacomo Fino and Andy, Giacomo Fino and Andy. My spy boy to your spy boy, sitting on the bayou. My spy boy to your spy boy, I'm gonna set your tail on fire. Talking about here now, here now.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
If you want me to love you, all that you must do is just say so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the epidemic of folks beginning their answers to questions with the word so proceeds apace. And this week, a cornucopia of them, of those examples of that behavior, is presented for your listening pleasure here on the show. So, here we go. First, testimony before Congress by an official of the Drug Czar's office, the U.S. Drug Czar's office.
How many marijuana deaths have there been in the last 5 years?
So if you're referring to overdoses, I am not sure of those numbers.
What is more dangerous and addictive? Methamphetamines and cocaine or marijuana?
So, you know, I don't think anyone would dispute the fact that there's relative toxicity related to those drugs.
How do you expect high school kids to take you seriously?
So Representative, I didn't mean to be disrespectful.
But this I'm very discouraged by your inability to answer questions.
So let me tell you, this morning I spent the bulk of my morning with a number of parents.
This is your brain on so. He's high on so. Now, an interview with the grandson of the guy who has those fascinating soap labels, Dr. Bronner.
Where did your grandfather learn how to make soap?
Sure. So he was a third generation German Jewish soap maker in southern Germany.
Was there a tradition of German Jewish soap making?
Yes. So the going back, I guess Napoleon, it took a while for Jews to get rights to land and property.
Right. Oh, that's
and
right.
All kinds of businesses.
I think the aristocratic Jews, I think they're called. The Jewish wealthy class.
Yeah. So that was kind of my family. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, came from nothing. But,
right. And he just made soap.
Yeah. So he was trained under the guild system of the time.
Who came up with that? Your great great grandfather?
Yeah. Well, no. I think my great grandfather. I guess. So, yeah.
How is it made? What makes it so special?
In soap making, you're basically, it's a blend of different oils and fats. I was supposed to memorize them all.
You were?
Yeah. So,
he told you to?
Yeah. So be like, what's the 13th?
Really?
Yeah.
His prophecy was what he was really concerned with.
Exactly. So after he escaped from Elgin State Asylum,
he ran away from the asylum.
Yeah. He got out.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, some so's about data.
Let's talk about that burger. How do you find the best burger?
So I've been mildly obsessed with data about cheeseburgers for a little while. It's my favorite meal.
And finally, a BBC interview with a former Iraqi interpreter for American forces in Iraq.
And I think you also threw somebody out of a window. How did that happen?
So we have information about one guy. He make a lot of trouble in that neighborhood in Mosul.
How did you come to work for them in the first place?
So after all successful mission with military police, they hear about my name, and there is a sergeant. He went to the SEALs and he told him I have one of the best terp I have in all my life.
You sometimes use children to reveal a suspect. How did you do that?
So sometime when, like most of the insurgents, they are very smart.
Yeah. So, I guess his English is good enough to say so. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Copyrighted. Award-winning feature of this broadcast. Imagine that.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen.
Wits University scientists have debunked two big myths around climate change by proving that despite predictions, tropical storms are not increasing in number. They are shifting. And South Africa could be at an increased risk of being directly impacted by tropical cyclones within the next 40 years. And while global warming is causing frost to be less severe, late season frost is not receding as quickly as flowering is advancing. Uh-oh. Increased frost risk, which may likely begin to threaten food security. According to Jennifer Fitchett, a PhD student at the Wits School of Geography, Archaeology, and Environmental Studies, there was an assumption that increasing sea surface temperatures caused by global warming is causing an increase in the number of tropical cyclones. But looking at data for the Southwest Indian Ocean over the last 161 years, she and co-author Professor Stefan Grab confirmed the results of previous studies, which found that there has been no increase in the number of tropical cyclones. Much of the perceived change in numbers is a result of improved storm detection methods. The big surprise came when they looked at where storms have been happening. As the oceans have warmed and the minimum sea surface temperatures necessary for a cyclone to occur have been moving further south, storms in the Southwest Indian Ocean have been moving further south, too. South Africa is already feeling the effects of the shift. We could see frequent, serious damage to South Africa by 2050, warned the researchers adding, "This is not what we expected from climate change. We thought tropical cyclones might increase in number, but we never expected them to move." And then she and her co-authors looked at, in a different study, at different types of citrus, oranges, lemons, and tangerines in two cities in Iran, where the existence of heritage gardens meant data were easily available. They found that while global warming is causing the fruit trees to flower as much as a month earlier than 50 years ago, changes in late season frost are not happening nearly as quickly. The layman's assumption is that as temperatures get warmer, there will be less frost. But although the severity of the frost has decreased, the last day of frost hasn't been receding as quickly as the advances in flowering. The result is that frost events are increasingly taking place during flowering and it damaging the flowers. No flowers, says the researcher, equals no fruit. Volcanic, that was from Science Daily, this too. Volcanic eruptions in the early part of the 20th century have cooled the planet, according to a study led by Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. This cooling partly offset the warming produced by greenhouse gases. Despite continuing increases in atmospheric levels of greenhouse gases and the total heat content of the ocean, global mean temperatures at the surface of the planet and in the troposphere, the lowest portion of the Earth's atmosphere, have shown relatively little warming since 1998. This hiatus has received considerable attention, as you probably know. The volcanic contribution is the subject of a new paper in a recent edition of Nature Geoscience. Volcanic eruptions inject sulfur dioxide gas into the atmosphere. If the eruptions are large enough to add sulfur dioxide to the stratosphere, that's the layer above the troposphere, the gas forms tiny droplets of sulfuric acid. They reflect some portion of the incoming sunlight back into space, cooling the Earth's surface and the lower atmosphere. There's also another similar mechanism at work, according to the BBC. Scientists say they found a mechanism by which the powerful smell of pine trees, the vapors that create those smells, or which we perceive as those smells, turn into aerosols above forests. These particles promote cooling by reflecting sunlight back into space and helping clouds to form. This research, published in the journal Nature, fills in a major gap in our understanding. According to the researchers, one of the biggest holes in scientific knowledge about climate change refers to the scale of the impact of atmospheric aerosols on temperatures. These particles form clouds that block sunlight as well as reflecting rays back into space. They can be formed in a number of ways, including volcanic activity. But according to this new research, the sweet-smelling vapors found in pine forests have confounded climate models as they turn into aerosols. Scientists haven't been able to accurately predict how many of the particles form. Now, an international team of researchers say they've solved the chemical mystery by which the odors become reflective cooling particles. They found there's an extra step in the process. Ultra-low volatility organic vapors in the air that irreversibly condense onto any surface or particle they meet. These vapors are so crazy in structure from what we had known before, said one of the authors, Dr. Joel Thornton of the University of Washington. It turns out this level of craziness is what gives them the special properties to stick to the smallest particles and help grow them up in size to become aerosols. Scientists say having a clear understanding of the way in which forest smells become aerosols will improve the accuracy with which they can predict the ability of these particles to limit rising temperatures. The vapors being emitted from the vegetation in the pine forest are contributing roughly half of the aerosols over the forest. They believe this is plays a significant role in reducing the impact of rising temperature. They argue this effect is likely to strengthen in the future. In a warmer world, photosynthesis will become faster with rising CO2, which will lead to more vegetation and more emission of these vapors. A negative feedback mechanism, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps. News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Get ready to play Indian, y'all. They don't do this nowhere else but in New Orleans. Here come the wild chapatula. Yeah, we the uptown ruler. From way uptown, y'all, in the big dirty team. And we coming out mighty bright morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest down in New Orleans. You can see Chief Jolly coming. You can hear his big gang coming.
You can hear them coming all over the 13 wall. He shoot Kunafuna, make the simple una. No bow, y'all holding you won't be ball. Charlie be hooping and hollering. Say we gon' meet everybody. Then everybody sing Indian Red. And then we head for the heart of the city. Yeah, y'all, we wild and pretty. We the uptown rulers, just like I said. Sing it. We the uptown ruler. Yeah, we the wild chapatula. Yeah, from way uptown, y'all, in the big 13. And we coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest down in New Orleans. The wild man, he take off running. Spy boy say another gang coming. Big chief, stop on the avenue. Flag coming running on the double. Signaling that it might be trouble. Big chief said, do like you wanna do.
As I dress in my suit, giving haters the boot. Straight up a wild out with my Mardi Gras crew. It's gangsta, probably looking shy and pretty. Chief Jolly Lil' Gang showing haters the pretty. From the north to the south, from the east to the west. Chief Jolly and the gang sure know how to dress. So in case you don't know, we ain't fear nobody. Lil' Gang so never give a shout out to Jolly.
Y'all, but it feels so good coming through our neighborhood. Big Chief smoking that fire green. Downtown towards Treme. Yeah, boy, we going all the way down. Then coming back home to the big 13. Yes, y'all, we the wild chapatula. Yeah, we the uptown ruler. The way uptown, y'all, then the big 13. We coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest down in New Orleans. Come the wild chapatula. Yeah, we the uptown ruler. From way uptown, y'all in the big 13. Come on now. And we coming out Mardi Gras morning. Ain't giving no kind of warning. Gonna be the prettiest town in New Orleans. Now get out the way, St. John's are coming. Get out the way, nobody running. Get out the way, tambourine ringing. Get out the way, Indian singing. Get out the way, give them the warning. Get out the way, uptown ruler. Get out the way, wild chapatula.
Get out the way. Get out the way.
Come on, hey. Get out the way, and John's coming. Get out the way.
This is Le Show from New Orleans, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
You probably already know this, but Mt. Gox, the troubled exchange for the virtual currency Bitcoin, filed for bankruptcy protection this week. It said it might have lost 750,000 of its customers' coins, essentially all of them in a hacking attack. The Tokyo-based exchange, which warned this month of a software flaw that may have allowed hackers to defraud it of Bitcoin, had halted all trading. Mark Karpeles, the company's chief executive, wearing a suit instead of his usual T-shirt, bowed in contrition and apologized in Japanese at a press conference in Tokyo. Quote, "There were weaknesses in the system," he said. "I'm truly sorry to have caused inconvenience." Unquote. When he wears a suit instead of a T-shirt, ladies and gentlemen, you know he's sorry. Dateline Cleveland, the founder of a job bank in Cleveland for marketing and communication, got a lesson in these areas when a nasty message she sent to a young job seeker went viral. Kelly Blazak, named Cleveland's 2013 Communicator of the Year, has now apologized, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Diana Makota, a graduate of John Carroll University in Cleveland, had moved back to Cleveland from Chicago and had gotten in touch with Blazek. She decided to share the email reply she got from Blazek. Quote, "Your invite to connect is inappropriate, beneficial only to you, and tacky," She said in a scathing and lengthy email, "Wow, I cannot wait to let every 25-year-old job seeker mine my top-tier marketing connections to help them land a job. Love the sense of entitlement in your generation." Blazek said in her apology, "The Cleveland Job Bank listings has been started out as a labor of love for the marketing industry, but somehow it has also become a labor, and I vented my frustrations on the very people I set out to help." She called her email rude, unwelcoming, unprofessional, and wrong. Dateline Detroit General Motors apologized as it linked seven more deaths to flawed ignition switches and more than doubled a U.S. car recall to nearly 1.4 million vehicles. Quote, "We are deeply sorry, and we're working to address this issue as quickly as we can," GM North America President Alan Beatty said in a statement. "The automaker acknowledged the ignition switch problem. We can turn the car off while it's being driven, shutting off power steering, anti-lock brakes, and airbags. It led to at least 31 crashes and 13 front seat fatalities. GM has conducted a nearly decade-long investigation of the defect, which it knew about since 2004. President of GM, Beatty, said the investigation, quote, "was not as robust as it should have been," unquote. The automaker is in discussion with the Transportation Department's National Highway Traffic Safety Administration about why it took so long to recall the vehicles. Dateline Tianjin, China, the president of the Chinese airline OK Airways has apologized and vowed stricter safety measures after one of its planes suffered a malfunction scare. "We are sorry. We assure the public that we will introduce stricter safety control measures and more careful maintenance of aircraft. Our pilots will have more meticulous preparation for every flight," said Lin Weining, president of OK Airways. An OK flight found a fault with its landing gear while airborne, landed successfully after more than 2 hours spent hovering. No casualties reported. Public relief soon turned to questions over OK safety measures. "It turned out it was not a landing gear failure, but a failure of the signal system for the equipment. Such a problem has happened twice or three times before," said Lin, changing the name to Almost OK Airlines. Dateline Edmonton, Canada. Catholic bishops in Alberta and the Northwest Territories have apologized for abuse that Aboriginal children suffered in residential schools. Edmonton Archbishop Richard Smith said the group is the last one in the country representing Catholic bishops to make a public offer of regret. Others have issued formal apology letters as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission held events in their regions, he said. "We are adding our voice to those of the Catholic bishops and leaders of religious communities across Canada," he said. "When people are hurt, you know it's important to say you're sorry." As president of the group, Smith apologized to those who experienced sexual and physical abuse at the schools and expressed regret for separating children from their families and suppressing their culture and language. That's all. Alberta was home to more residential schools than any other provinces, including 15 that were operated by Catholic dioceses or religious organizations. In 2009, Pope Benedict expressed his sorrow to a delegation from Canada's Assembly of First Nations over the abuse in schools run by the church. Earlier, the Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, had apologized in the House of Commons for the government's role in developing the schools. Just another little service for Aboriginal populations. Nothing new here. Dateline Iowa City, Iowa. University of Iowa President Sally Mason apologized for recent comments made to the student newspaper at a presidential forum. Mason made the comments regarding sexual assault to the Daily Iowan last week, which spurred campus-wide protests. She told the paper that sexual assault is not completely unavoidable given human nature. She since released a statement saying there is no excuse for such behavior. At the forum, she apologized for the comments. "I am sorry for the pain my words caused," said the president of the University of Iowa. Dateline, not that I'm making any point about that. Dateline Berlin, a German cartoonist has apologized for causing offense by depicting Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg as a hooked-nosed octopus after Jewish groups complained it resembled Nazi propaganda. Cartoonist Burkhard Moore said he intended to make a point about Facebook devouring rival WhatsApp. It didn't realize the parallels to the Nazis' anti-Semitic portrayal of Jews as hungry, tentacled monsters. The cartoon was published in early editions of the Munich daily Süddeutsche Zeitung. Later editions showed an empty hole where Zuckerberg's face had been. Quote, "I'm very sorry about this misunderstanding and any reader's feelings I may have hurt," Moore said. "Anti-Semitism and racism are ideologies that are totally alien to me," he added. The head Nazi hunter at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Jerusalem said he wasn't convinced by the apology. He drew a caricature that is so reminiscent of Der Stürmer caricatures that it's inconceivable to me he didn't realize this, said the head Nazi hunter, referring to the weekly propaganda paper that the Nazis used to whip up hatred against Jews. Facebook didn't respond to comments. Süddeutsche Zeitung has been criticized in the past for appearing to defame Jews. Last July, it was forced to apologize after printing a picture caption that likened the state of Israel to a ravenous monster, the paper said at the time. It regretted any, quote, misunderstandings. It's a problem with its readership, misunderstandinghood. Clay County Sheriff Rick Besseler, this would be in Florida, publicly apologized to a Green Cove Springs teen who was wrongfully arrested and spent more than a month in jail on a sexual battery charge. Cody Lee Williams spent 35 days in jail last year after Deputy Sheriff Johnny Hawkins failed to show the victim a photo of Williams to get a positive identification. This Cody Lee Williams was charged with having sex with someone younger than 12. After seeing court documents, he realized police were actually seeking a different Cody Williams. Cody Lee Williams and Cody Raymond Williams were born the same year and went to the same high school. This information got through his mother to the police department. Hawkins was suspended for 10 days and transferred to patrol duty. And the sheriff apologized. "As arresting an innocent person is something we fear more than letting a guilty person get away, I extend to Cody Lee Williams my apology for this error, and we will seek to make things right for him." Unquote. The sheriff whose deputy arrested the wrong Cody Williams. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, yes, there's more. The shows of the week are expanding this week, ladies and gentlemen. On Monday of this week, BBC's radio service carried a little feature about mindfulness. Some of it sounded like this.
So a really good starting point is just to feel your feet on the floor. So my name is Chris Cullen, and I work at the Oxford University Mindfulness Centre. So mindfulness is a training of the attention.
So today we're going to learn a practice called the mindfulness of breathing.
So I'm Subhadramati, that's my Buddhist name. So the Buddha practiced and taught a meditation practice called the mindfulness of breathing.
Yeah, so he did. But I wasn't the only one who noticed. These were listener comments read later in the week.
Maybe your mindfulness lady could be aware enough to listen to what she's saying and not start sentences with an unnecessary "so." Are these people so busy being mindful that they don't realise what they're saying? Wouldn't it be mindful to include thinking about what you were saying?
I don't know about mindfulness and its ability to ground those who follow its path. The propensity of its practitioners to begin every sentence with "so" would drive me up the wall.
I'm already there, babe. The So's... bonus edition of the So's of the Week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you know by now, President Obama had a phone conversation with Afghan President Hamid Karzai. We're now less than 2 months away from presidential elections in Afghanistan. One of the candidates running is a brother of the president of Afghanistan, another Karzai. More Karzai talk, free $5 T-shirts, Karzai talk T-shirts at the harryshearer.com store. Anyway, the president of the United States told the president of Afghanistan that the United States was now going to start making plans to withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan at the end of this year due to President Karzai's repeated drawn-out failure to sign an agreement with the United States that would enable the United States to keep the troops there. It's the same kind of agreement that the U.S. failed to conclude with the Maliki government in Iraq, which explains why we don't have any troops there anymore. It was the Maliki government's refusal to indemnify U.S. troops against the possibility of prosecution in Iraqi courts that was the deal breaker there. The deal breaker with Afghanistan has been a whole series of things, including most recently President Karzai's decision to release about 75 prisoners who had been held in the notorious Bagram prison, once under U.S. control, most recently under Afghan control, prisoners who the United States said had blood on their hands. So I guess they didn't have any Barakzo in Bagram. That's how it looks from here. How does it look from there?
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where our marketplace studio is an actual marketplace.
From the newly cyber-secure presidential palace in downtown Kabul, the city is so nice they named it. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Krip and Krap, the Vigorish Brothers. Welcome to Karzai Talk. Today's program comes to you with the assistance of the Afghanistan Poppy Institute, advancing the research agenda for safer heroin.
Well, my dear brother, we're only 2 months away from the big election to replace you as president.
That's right. There's no replacing me on this program.
Not until the new president takes over.
Yes, this is one perk I'm going to miss.
Well, it's the one perk they can't indict you for.
No, see, you make fun. Mm-hmm. But listeners might think you're serious with all this corruption talk.
Well, listeners might want to know you said you closed 3 lanes of the Kabul bridge due to a traffic study.
That was perfectly reasonable. No. To get economic development, my younger brother, you have to have traffic. And we were studying how to get more of it.
So now it appears our friends in Pakistan have failed to talk to the Taliban and are now going to attack them. Before they try to talk to them again.
Sounds like our family dinners. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, this is Barack, longtime president, second-time caller.
Ah, he's two-timing you already.
Barack, my friend, I tried to email you, but I got the healthcare.gov site instead.
Well, I hope they didn't try to enroll you.
Actually, they're paying for my nose job.
He's making it bigger. Anything to look less American.
That's true. But dear Barack, do you have a question for us?
Well, as I understand it, that's your format. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I do. Hamid, do you think there's any chance you're going to sign the bilateral troop agreement with my country before you leave office?
Barack, if I may, you are making a mighty big assumption.
I'm assuming that he is going to sign it.
You're assuming that he's going to leave office. Those elections look pretty shady to me.
Well, they haven't been held yet.
That's what he means.
That's what I mean.
Barack, if I understand our phone call the other night correctly.
The one that was supposed to be private, except you made the contents public.
Hey, the people have a right to know what we think they should know.
Anyway, you were telling me that you are going to start planning to pull all your troops out since I haven't signed that piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you want to keep those troops here to prevent our country from being used again by, I think you called them, the bad guys?
That's what we call one. Mm-hmm. That's right. That way we don't have to learn the names of all the different groups. You know, there are hundreds.
It's just 20 guys with a random Arabic name generator. That's their little trick. And the people who might be most disturbed by the bad guys using our country would be who?
Well, you know, the people of the free world. Primarily the United States, the freest country the world has ever known. Except for maybe Iceland.
So I have to ask you again. Why would you pull your troops out to hurt mainly yourself? Help me here.
Maybe it's because most of the people who patronize dominatrixes are in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, but wouldn't the plural be dominatrices?
Maybe out of respect to our feminist friends, the plural should be dominators.
That's right. They like to be called actors now.
Once he pulls his troops out, you know what they'll be called.
What?
Hey, you in the burqa.
So, look, you know, sorry I got sidetracked there.
No, that's right.
We can't commit to our troops staying there unless you commit to...
To letting them stay here? I don't recall signing anything to let them in here.
But you do recall them helping you win the election.
That's just because I promised a business-friendly tax structure.
As I recall, you promised no taxes.
That's what he just said. That's what
he just said. Right. Hey, who knows what can happen between now and the time when the votes are finally counted?
You know something about the votes here. Makes them very slow to count, the friction or something. Mm-hmm.
Well, just remember, we're going to start planning for the zero option.
Oh, and I'm going to start planning for our next caller. Thanks for the call.
He's more persistent than a Pakistani Jehovah's Witness.
And about as popular. Hello, you are on Kazai Talk.
Hello, this is ex-prisoner Najib. Long-time Bagram detainee, first-time caller.
Oh, welcome, my friend. Are you calling to thank me for your newly gained freedom? You know, freedom is like shashlik. You don't miss it until they take it away from you.
Then everything's like shashlik.
That's true.
I'm calling to ask you a question.
The format wins again.
I keep hearing the very loud rock and roll song that they played at the Bagram prison to disrupt my sleep.
Oh, look, you have to take that up with the Americans.
You could sue them. They like that.
No, I didn't have a cell phone in prison.
Oh, that is terrible.
So I could never Shazam that song to find out what it is.
Mm.
Now I've got a phone.
Mm-hmm.
I keep hearing that song.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to Shazam my own head.
Caller, if perhaps you figure out a way to Google your own head, then the rest would be easy.
Thanks for the call. We had help today from the Afghan Media Center, producers of the first Afghan viral video series, Dead Kitty.
Legal services for Cars I Talk by the law firm of Ketchum and Newcomb. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. Join us again for another edition of Cars I Talk. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
And now, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. This story just gets better and better. I'm sorry. I'm a sucker for it. Rupert Murdoch. You've heard of him, donated $100,000 to Tony Blair's charity, unaware that his wife had allegedly grown close to the former prime minister behind his back. This is from a British tabloid newspaper not owned by Rupert Murdoch. You can see where their butter is breaded. According to a U.S. tax return, which emerged this week, the American arm of Blair's Faith Foundation received the... gift from the media tycoon's company, Nice Corp, before the former prime minister had private meetings with Wendy Deng. The donation came as Blair, according to evidence in the ongoing phone hacking trial, got in touch with News Corp to offer the former Sun editor Rebecca Brooks and Rupert Murdoch advice on a between us basis. You may recall this from last week when Tony Blair advised Rebecca Brooks, among other things, to definitely take sleeping pills. Since then, both Blair and Murdoch's friendship has soured over allegations the ex-prime minister had grown close to Miss Deng. This week, Nice Corp, declined comment on the donation, while a spokesman for the charity said, quote, "The Tony Blair Faith Foundation does not name individuals or organizations who donate to us," unquote. Hey, that'll be good for money laundering. The former PM's foundation, quote, "provides the practical support required to help prevent religious prejudice, conflict, and extremism," unquote. So, that's working out. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Addy?
I am so drunk.
Adam gets drunk during Mardi Gras time, huh?
You tell me.
All right, then. Health Canada is citing two separate series of radiation tests on British Columbia fish, along with ongoing ocean monitoring, as reasons why regular Canadian domestic seafood testing is not warranted in the wake of the Fuk nuclear accident. What we've seen so far presents no health risk, says Health Canada Senior Media Relations Officer Sean Upton. He should know. If increased radiation is found in the waters this year or next year, then more testing would be done as needed. We know there's going to be radiation from Fuk for years to come. The testing will never stop, says the media relations officer for Health Canada. He says Health Canada scientists tested 28 fish samples provided last year by the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, and no radiation from Fuk was detected in any of the specimens. On the other hand, Dateline Washington, 13 employees who worked the night shift at a nuclear waste burial site in New Mexico after an underground leak are carrying radioactive materials in their bodies. But it's too soon to say how much health risk this poses, according to the Energy Department. The workers inhaled plutonium and americium. That's just an element. It lodged in the body, bombards internal organs with subatomic particles for the rest of the person's lifetime. Something you could depend on. The dose calculation is a bit arcane, reports the New York Times, because the dose in such cases will be delivered over many years. Calculating a lifetime dose will require several urine and fecal samples taken over time to determine the rate at which the body is eliminating the materials. So they have some fun in their future, those workers. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission reported in February that Entergy Corporation's Riverbend Nuclear Power Plant in St. Francisville in Louisiana was found to have a leak of radioactive water from a cooling system that started October 2, 2012, but the company took nearly 5 months to stem the flow. If it had not been for a routine refueling outage, an energy inspector would not have spotted the problem. It would have posed a bigger health risk, according to the NRC. The NRC classified the violation as a low-level safety significance because the amount was far below the required reportable quantity, and posed a low health risk. Admittedly, and additionally, during the nearly five-month time, the water flow was not continuous. Entergy did not initially report the leak and chucked the issue lower on its priority list. We assumed the leak was clean domestic water being delivered to our wastewater treatment plant. You know what happens when you assume, Energy. The lifetime risk of developing cancer has risen slightly among one-year-old girls. You are drunk.
Yeah, I'm just listening.
The lifetime risk of developing cancer has risen slightly among one-year-old girls in an area affected by the crisis at Fuk, according to a study published this week in a U.S. science journal. The assessment was based on an August-September 2012 study by Japanese researchers conducted about a year and a half after the meltdown. The study checked the exposure of around 460 residents living near the crippled plant. The health risk assessment indicates that doses after 2012 will raise the lifetime solid cancer incidence rate among one-year-old girls by 1.06 percentage points in an area near Fuk. The study covered both male and female residents. It's the first time projections have been made regarding the probability of cancer risk related to the disaster.
Now I'm sleeping.
I made an Adam sleep. Bypassing government bylines, Tokyo Electric Power says it will end compensation payments next February to people whose incomes have fallen because of the Fukushima nuclear accident.
Who owns them, BP?
Oh, he woke up. The operator of the stricken Fukushima nuclear plant announced its decision this week, citing an improvement in the employment climate. But the Dispute Resolution Reconciliation Committee for Nuclear Damage Compensation, a governmental body that sets guidelines for compensation to nuclear disaster victims, really, you have such an agency, has not decided when to terminate reparations. We may not abide by the guidelines, but considering the particularity of the accident, we have sufficiently extended the indemnity period, a TEPCO accident said.
They must be owned by BP.
I know they must be owned by BP because BP is suing and advertising and all sorts of things trying to end payments in the Deepwater Horizon disaster, ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't know. Last week, officials from TEPCO announced that extremely radioactive water had leaked from a storage tank at the Fukushima plant. According to the utility, over 100 tons of water containing 240 million becquerels per liter of beta ray emitting substances leaked out of the storage tanks. The water which leaked was partially treated water from early on in the disaster. Three valves, which should have been closed, were open, said a TEPCO spokesperson.
It's those damn valves.
Yeah. Got to replace those valves. TEPCO is reanalyzing 164 water samples collected last year at the plant because its previous readings significantly undercounted radiation levels.
That can happen. Like in elections.
Yes. The utility said the levels were undercounted due to errors in its testing of beta radiation, which includes strontium-90. None of the samples was taken from seawater. These errors occurred during a time when the number of samplings rapidly increased, said TEPCO, which explains everything. Don't tell Health Canada, but radiation from Fukushima has reached waters offshore Canada, researchers said this week at the annual American Geophysical Union's Ocean Sciences meeting in Honolulu. Good place for a meeting, guys. Two radioactive cesium isotopes, 134 and 137, have been detected offshore of Vancouver, British Columbia. The detected concentrations are much lower than the Canadian safety limit for cesium in drinking water.
Cesium, I hardly knew him.
You are drunk. Clean, cheap, safe, too drunk to meter, our friend the Atom. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this weekend's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free podcast through WWNO.org, Sideshow Network, SoundCloud, and iTunes. And it'd be just like Carnival continuing for another week if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. By the way, I don't mention this often enough, but an invaluable resource if you're looking for stations around the country that stream this program or any other public radio program in this or any other country that you might be interested in, check out publicradiofan.com. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson. Thanks for the throw. THREAUX, babe. The email address for this program is located at the same place you can find the playlist for the music heard here on and a store offering Cars I Talk t-shirts for $5. That's all at harryshearer.com. And I tweet to you. I do. Many times a week at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. Happy Mardi Gras from New Orleans.